Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, January 16th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The Alaska Board of Game rejected tougher restrictions for hunters who shoot nannies. Managers have been concerned about declining numbers of female mountain goats near Sitka, but the seven-member board unanimously voted to keep the status quo in place. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Attendees to Tuesday's Board of Game meeting in Sitka could pick up a variety of papers and booklets at the back of the room, and one of them was a series of photographs, a quiz you can give yourself, Billy or Nanny. Telling the difference between a male and female mountain goat is a big deal for hunters and for wildlife managers. In some cases, if a single hunter shoots a nanny, it has the potential to close an entire area to hunting of any goats for any one. And the state keeps close tabs on the area around Sitka. In 2005, there were 883 goats in the busiest hunting zones on Baranof Island. Last year's estimate, 352. That decline worries state wildlife managers, and the proposal before the Board of Game on Tuesday would have brought the hammer down. If you shoot a nanny, you can't take a goat in the unit around Sitka for the next 5 years. Nathan Turner is vice chairman of the Board of Game.
I think 5 years is a bit excessive. To start out with a hammer or a sledgehammer instead of a small hammer might be a bit much. But
Turner's comments echoed those of Chairman Ted Spraker of Soldotna. He said the Department of Fish and Game needs to get a handle on the overharvest of nannies, but that the current system of closing areas by emergency order seems to be working. Right now, points are tallied for taking a nanny versus a billy. Nannies are worth 2 points, billies are worth one, and when a zone reaches a certain number of points, it's shut down. Spraker wondered if the point system could be expanded.
Have you looked at going to, say, 4 points for nannies or 5 points for nannies, and then in conjunction with that, put in a real short reporting period for the female harvest? So if you take a nanny, you have to report in 3 days.
Sitka area wildlife biologist Phil Mooney said in 2010, the Department of Fish and Game issued emergency orders for some areas of Baranof Island. It allowed hunters to take a number of billies or one nanny before an area shut down.
Well, the first hunter out took a nanny and shut that area down. And my gosh, people stormed into our office and said, "Who the heck took that nanny? Can you post their picture up on the wall?" I said, "No, we can't do that." But it definitely got their attention.
Fewer nannies were taken the next year, Mooney said, and he thinks a lot of it is a result of the tough measures in 2010, which led hunters to self-police.
It took a short period of time in Sitka for people to figure out who took the nanny, and they put peer pressure on them, and that's why I think you'll see the drop right there. But at the same time, our survey trends are still down, so that's the general consensus of the group was we need to do something pretty serious until we see those numbers coming back up.
The Board of Game appeared to agree with that. It voted unanimously to reject the tougher restrictions for taking nannies. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
You can take that quiz mentioned at the beginning of the story to see if you can tell the difference between a billy and a nanny. We've linked it through our website, kcaw.org. Lots of fish, good prices, and a competitive fleet made this year's gillnet salmon season in Upper Lynn Canal one for the record books. Margaret Friedenauer of KHNS has this report.
Randy Bachman is a commercial fisheries biologist with Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Haines. He's responsible for all the bar and line graphs that are pushing the edges of their margins this year.
She was a record breaker. It was a record in terms of value, numbers of fish, and and participation.
Let's start with the amount of fish. The 2012 Lynn Canal season hit an all-time record for hatchery chum harvest. Of the more than 2.1 million salmon caught this season, 1.5 million of them were hatchery chum, a product of Douglas Island Pink and Chum Hatchery in Juneau. Nearly a quarter million of the total take were sockeye, another record-setting figure. And that's on top of the fact that sockeye weren't targeted as hard as in years past by the fleet. Bachman said the good run of chums kept most boats in the fleet in the southern area of the canal, in some ways aiding the return of sockeye to the Chilkoot system. That led to the highest numbers on record for the Chilkoot sockeye returns as well. Escapement at the Chilkoot River Weir topped 114,000, literally off the charts of Bachman's bar graph. Earlier this season, gill netter Norm Hughes described the unusual dilemma fishermen faced. Fish hard for the high-priced sockeye in the Upper Lynn Canal, or spend time in the Lower Lynn Canal focusing on the lower-priced but easier-to-catch chum.
It's just that if we have a strong return run coming back, and there just wasn't locals targeting sockeyes maybe so much up in the Upper Canal, because it's just, you know, well, I can make $3,000 on some sockeye, or I can make $15,000 in the same time with the same net. What are you going to do? You're going to drive your boat 4 hours down the canal and try and bump into some chums.
The numbers on the Chilkat River side were a little different. There weren't good expectations, but restrictions on fishing in the inlet for most of the summer meant escapement goals were met, Bachman said.
The total run was probably below average, and because of the anticipated poorer than average return of Chilkat Lake fish, we didn't have really any fishing opportunity within Chilkat Inlet for most of the summer season. Up until about early fall, then we had some openings up to about halfway into the inlet. Once we were ensured that we were going to have Chilkat Lake escapement goal in the bag.
The Chilkoot and Chilkat systems are two of the most productive salmon systems in northern southeast. Coho returns were below average, Bachman said, although the fleet had the second highest harvest of pinks on record. Solid prices pushed the value of this year's Lynn Canal fishery to $15.4 million, again, an all-time record, and more than $5 million higher than 2011. Prices remained on par with last year. They averaged 80 cents a pound for chum, 146 for sockeye, 35 cents for pinks, and 129 for coho. The combination of factors also led to a record-setting year for number of boats in the fishery. Fish and Game figures show 239 different boats in the area during the summer. That averaged out to 109 boats on average participating during the 16-week season. Bachman said gill netters came from as far as Sitka, Petersburg, and Metlakatla to try their luck in the 15C area this season.
You know, after last year's results, I think we attracted a lot of people up here in anticipation of another good hatchery chum run, and it turned out to be better than expected.
While the numbers were all good, the positive season was tempered by the loss of two longtime fishermen in the Haines fleet. Both men fell overboard while fishing and were presumed drowned. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friedenauer.
One of Ketchikan's best-known residents, who is a senior advocate and a former Citizen of the Year, spoke at Wednesday's Chamber of Commerce lunch. He talked a little about Ketchikan's history, but he focused on what life's like now for people of a certain age. KRBD's Layla Carey attended and has this report.
When Ed Zastrow arrived in Alaska in 1954, the area was still a territory, and Ketchikan was a quaint little town at the base of a mountain.
Board sidewalks, board streets, lots of bars where you could go into, was one on every corner, and within about 30 seconds you could get yourself into a lot of trouble and do other things that will go unmentioned.
He reminisced about the past 58 years during a recent Chamber of Commerce lunch and says there are a few things he misses, old-fashioned shoe and clothing stores in particular. Some services, though, have improved.
The big event was, obviously, running down to ACS. That's presently where Island Tile and Marble is located today. You could go down there and use a telephone, hard line, and you could call someone in the lower 48. There were very few telephone calls, and it was radio, so there were hard lines that you had to do it. That's the only way you could call the lower 48, and then you suffered from a bill of $10 or $12.
The focus of Zastro's talk was seniors in Ketchikan, their needs, and how they affect the local economy. He says Ketchikan's senior population grew last year.
There has been a 12% increase in our senior population, and we anticipate another 10 to 12% increase in senior population this coming year. Why? It's no secret. We have neighbors that have lived here years ago, and they're coming back.
But what's bringing those former residents back? Zastro says Ketchikan is a safe place to live and offers many benefits, including three new senior housing facilities. He referred to a senior directory, which provides details about various agencies and what services they provide.
When you go through it and use it, It not only tells you the name of the organization you'll be working with, it'll give you the name of a real person and a real telephone number, and you aren't talking to a computer. Plus, it's in large print.
Zastro says seniors have a significant impact on the local economy and tend to spend just about all the money they have. Per person, seniors get $1,180 per month from Social Security. He says many seniors at least double that through pensions and investments. If they spend all that on food, fuel, rent, condo fees, etc., seniors spend about $40 million annually in Ketchikan. Zastro talked a little about Social Security and other federal benefits for seniors. He says it's upsetting to seniors when they hear what he says are inaccurate rumors about those programs and what Congress plans to do with them.
What is the truth on that? I personally feel that Social Security will be around for a long time. Granted, in 2034, it's going to have to be tweaked, or some of those checks are going to be a little bit less. But that fund is still, according to the latest information I have from various sources, is still intact. Of course, the government owes a lot of money to it.
Zastro is the president of the local AARP chapter. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Zastro was the 2010 Citizen of the Year. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And now a look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, areas of fog in the morning with rain developing, becoming heavy at times in the afternoon. Highs around 42 with south wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, rain heavy at times with lows around 38. South wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, gusts to 35 miles per hour in exposed areas. KCAW, Sitka.